Hello everyone, this is Mike Quinsey, Connecting the Light. My guest today is Nuk Sanchez, who along with Thomas Vieira has recently written a book called Take Me to Truth, Undoing the Ego. And it was described by them as bridging the gap between seeking enlightenment and finding it. I would like to invite you onto the program, Nuk. Are you there?
Hi, Mike. I detect a British accent.
That's great. What I would first like to ask you before we get into various aspects of the book is, how did you and Thomas come together to write the book? What is the story behind that?
Well, we haven't got 2 years to tell the tale, so I'll try and do it in a few minutes. Tom and I had very normal dysfunctional childhoods and backgrounds, which led us into meeting when we were in our late 20s. And we'd already left a trail of broken relationships behind us.
Yeah.
And both of us, individually before we met, had decided that that was enough. That was enough of the broken relationships. That there's got to be a better way, there's got to be another way to understand and experience what love really is. Not just human love, but, you know, divine love. And maybe through human love we could learn what divine love was. So
right.
When we met, and this is a long time ago, 1984, when we met, we had found each other, in each other, that commitment to actually find out really what love is beyond the known form of love that we humans tend to experience, which can turn to hate. It can end, right? So we made a commitment way back then to never abandon each other, and that means, like, to stick together, no matter even if the form of the relationship changes, to stick together, to never to abandon each other, to find out exactly what love is. And in 1990, we came across a wonderful text or book called A Course in Miracles.
Yes,
I've heard of it?
Read extracts from it, and I have read Greg's book. So I'm familiar to a point as to what's in that one, yes.
Yeah, so
Gary,
what we did...
Gary Renard's book.
Yeah, Gary Renard, that's right, The Disappearance of the Universe.
Yeah.
Which
I read that quite recently, funnily enough.
I hope you had a good laugh.
I thought it was quite good in the main. I've never read the original book, although my friend had it and he told me about it. I don't think it's for everyone. It's a very deliberate and objective course, but it's very interesting to read.
Yes, it is interesting to read. And those people who are called to do that pathway will find it extremely useful and helpful.
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes.
But you've got to be
called
got to be called to do that pathway, because if I'd been called 30 years ago to do this, I would never have taken it. I wasn't ready, you know?
But
as Thomas and I found A Course in Miracles, and that was really the beginning of the end, if you know what I mean.
Because
then we truly lived the actual principles that A Course in Miracles is talking about, and that's how we got to find out about what the ego was, and that it is the false self.
Yes.
And then it gave us the means by which to actually undo that false self, so we could get down to who we really were, which is the co-creator, the light within, the divine being who actually has no needs. So that's
right,
it in a nutshell.
Yes. Okay.
So what happened? This is very unusual, and I would never recommend this to anybody else, but during the journey to love, to find out what real love was, we got to the point where we found out that in our marriage, it's still held within the framework or the form, the marriage. It held within that framework a lot of codependent issues relating to the false self and the ego. So we decided that if we really wanted to learn what true, endless, irreversible love was, we'd have to forfeit or get rid of the form of the relationship.
Yeah.
So that's what we did. And we divorced. And so, now, of course, we, yes. you know, we divorced in order to save the relationship.
Right.
It's upside down.
Yeah, yeah, that's a different experience. So where are you saying that the ego comes from?
Well, I mean, and again, you know, this is what we've come to realize and believe ourselves, and it's up to, and this is what A Course in Miracles teaches, is that, that God, as we think we know God, an all-loving God, how could an all-loving God make a world of opposites? I mean, how could God make fear, conflict,
yes.
pain, hatred, death,
indeed,
or
yes.
make time and space even, right?
Yeah.
Anything that, that is not endless and infinite and all joyful, peaceful and loving. So what the Course explains and what we say in a Take Me to Truth is it couldn't be that an all-loving God made something opposite to love. And what happened, unless, of course, it's a dream.
Yes.
So the next step would be that this reality that we call the world and the body we live in happens to be a dream of
yeah.
Of a huge proportion, but a dream.
Yeah.
And so
yeah.
it sort of changes the purpose in life to being, well, it's not really about fixing the dream or trying to excel in the dream. It's actually about finding out who we really are under the false self and
yeah.
and to align with the purpose, which is to wake up from the dream.
Right.
Yeah.
So what people do is they think that this reality is the true one, whereas in fact it isn't.
Yes, yes. Well, that's what I did most of my life, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know about many others, but I have a sneaking suspicion that most people, like myself most of my life, had a lot more suffering than joy, all right? Suffering with
yeah.
relationships, you know, and
yeah.
I mean not just romantic relationships, but relationships with your parents, especially if you've been a child, you've suffered any type of abuse,
yes,
you know, relationships with your peers, colleagues,
yes.
Relationships to yourself. Most of us have had an awful lot of problems in all of these areas with that, with those relationships. And then there comes the added complication of relationships to life, all right?
Yes.
And,
yes.
And, the, and our daily button-pressing environment. This is how the ego gets us and grabs us, is that it's not really who we are. It's this, it's actually just a belief system. It's,
yeah.
it's a belief system that is uninvestigated. And basically, it's very simply, it's a will that is apart from the divine, right?
Mm.
So it's what we call the suffering factor.
Yeah, it sounds to me from your description that it might not be out of place to call it a false identity.
Say it again, a forced identity?
Yes, we identify ourselves with the ego, mm-hmm. but it's not really our true self.
That's true.
But, yes.
Yes, very, very true. That is
right.
very true, yeah.
Now, you say that your book has several steps which, to quote your words, will propel you from duality and fear that we have created in the oneness of the source. Now, can you tell us what one or two of those steps might be, how you approach it to
okay.
propel,
well,
us,
I might
propel
just,
us from duality?
Yeah. I might, first of all, what we're talking about is and the Course has it has this in the manual for teachers in A Course in Miracles, is what's called the six stages of the development of trust. Now, the ego doesn't
yeah.
trust, all right? And
yeah.
so these six stages of the development of trust are really the six stages that us human beings will go through in our spiritual journey of awakening or spiritual awakening, all right?
Yeah.
And there are six stages. The first one's the undoing. The second one's sorting out. Third one's relinquishment. Fourth is a period of rest. Fifth is unsettling. And the last one, when we touch the face of God, is achievement. But these stages we go through, you can't go through them with the intellect. You have to actually experience them. And they use, and of course, this is precipitated by a disillusionment of some kind, because anybody who identifies with ego and who whose ego is working their life out quite well at the moment. In other words, they're making money, they have a good love life, they've pretty much got it all worked out and they're having a ball. Mm. The last thing they want to do is wake up from that.
Yes.
Okay? So, and I speak from experience, you know, for I did have a patch there many, many years ago where it seemed everything was working out. But eventually, because the ego's mantra is seek and do not find, that's its mantra, what it will do is sabotage anything that you bring to life, whether it be a relationship with somebody or a business or something. Somehow or another, it's going to sabotage you. And what usually happens before we seriously decide to join the journey of spiritual awakening is we have to go through a period of disillusionment where we really get to the point where we've tried pretty much everything and we believe, look, this is not working. I think we might try a divine way instead. And then we're prepared to surrender. You know.
Yes.
Does that make sense to you?
Oh, yes, yes, indeed. Yes,
you relate to that, yeah?
Yeah. Now, you evidently admire some of the phrases or comments that Edgar Cayce made, and I see that their organization reviewed your book. I like the one that you quoted where Edgar Cayce said, if there is only the ego and self-considered, great will be the fall of the entity. That really is...
That's exactly
confirming
right.
Confirming what you've just said, isn't it,
truthfully? That's it, but he had a beautiful way of saying things. Are you familiar with Edgar Cayce?
I'm familiar. I've read all of his books, and in fact he had a very great influence on me when I went on my spiritual quest, yes.
Oh, good. Yeah, he really is wonderful. He really is, and I mean, you know, he was able to grab people's attention back then, and this is last century. This is in the 1900s, yeah?
And, well, he died in 1944, I think it was. So it was prior to that date, yes.
That's right. And he really was doing a wonderful job even back then of translating often very complicated concepts into a language that everyday people could understand.
Indeed.
Yeah, he was fantastic. Yeah. He actually helped my mother greatly to understand this as well.
Yes. Just as a sort of side point here, were you aware that he has allegedly reincarnated at this time?
Well, you know, I heard. Somebody told me at a workshop in October or November last year, I believe.
Yes.
But I didn't get the details. So can you let us know?
Well, I'll tell you his name. It's David Wilcox.
That rings a bell. Yeah. And where is he right now?
He's in the States.
Mm-hmm.
He obviously has a very active website. And my own intuitive feeling is that his claims are correct. But if you obviously put in the search engine for David Wilcox, you'll find it. But after the program, I could email you and let you have the site address, if you like.
That'd be lovely. Yeah, that'd be great, Mike, because, you know, through all of our workshops that we're doing around the world at the moment, there are many people who are Edgar Cayce fans. And it'd be lovely to pass on the... You know, on a website, if I could. That'd be terrific.
Yeah.
Thank you for that.
I thought you'd be interested in that.
Yeah.
Now, anyway, let's get back to your book again. You've said that quantum forgiveness is the top of your list as a method to free the ego. Now, explain briefly, if that's possible, what that means.
Okay. All right. Well, it's our belief, and as with A Course in Miracles as well, and this is something that Eckhart Tolle makes a lot of reference to too, is basically there's only one of us in this dream, so to speak, okay?
Yeah.
I mean, we come from oneness, and that's quite literal in these terms that we're talking about. And the way back to oneness is to actually live the principles of oneness. So one of the fastest ways that we can wake up from the dream or eliminate suffering in this lifetime is to see everybody as one, and through and this and let me just explain. It's through forgiveness, or what we call quantum forgiveness. It's not like the old forgiveness. Quantum forgiveness sees first that there's only one of us here. Okay, there's only one ego, and there's only one unified self or higher self, yeah?
Yes,
yes. So if somebody offends me, then it's in my best interest to overlook their error or to forgive them, because whenever I forgive another, what I'm doing is I'm actually forgiving my own unconscious guilt.
I agree,
right?
Yes.
Which is the source of the ego. I mean, we don't know any of this consciously, Mike, you know. This is all unconscious. But every opportunity we have to forgive somebody, then we should take it, because each time we do that, we're actually undoing a huge part of the ego in ourselves.
Right, I believe that.
Yeah.
You've also said that being in the present moment is helpful. Explain how that is.
Okay. Well, if you're like me, you would have spent almost 35 or 40 years anywhere else but in the now moment, okay?
Mm.
And it's what we... The funny thing is, and this hit me like a sledgehammer when I finally read it, it was from Eckhart Tolle that I first read this in The Power of Now, was that there never was a moment in our lives that wasn't the now. The only thing is that we weren't there for it, okay? And that was very true for me. I realized that all my thoughts, when I looked at my thoughts, I became the observer of my thoughts. All my thoughts were about the past or about planning the future in every moment. So for 35 years, I actually wasn't in the now moment. Okay?
I see, yes.
And the sad part of that is it's only in the now moment that any real action or change can occur. It's only in the now moment. Nothing can be done in the future, and nothing can be done in the past. They're both an illusion. So it's in the now moment. So, we have a little tool in our book called the PIQ formula, which stands for Presence, Inquiry, and Quantum Forgiveness. And it's a little tool that helps people to get in touch with the now moment, especially if their buttons are being pressed by a person, a thing, a situation, or a circumstance, yeah?
Yes, yes.
And what it teaches us to do is the second we get our buttons pressed is realize the buttons being pressed, realize you've got an emotional charge, and then decide to be the observer of what you're feeling. So that pulls us back into the now moment. So we can actually be in the now moment for those few seconds or minutes while things are occurring. And what happens is when we do that, we're allowing the divine to enter that now moment and transform it and reinterpret that moment, especially if it's one that pressed our buttons, to being something that's positive.
Yeah. Well, that's coming on to what you also said, that I choose the feelings I experience.
That's so true. That's exactly right. We choose. That's it. And, you know, nothing. This is a tough one for people to grab. You know, it took me years of trying to do this intellectually. I was a very slow learner. I had a huge ego. And what it was is that I couldn't get over that hump of thinking that it was other people. It was other things and circumstances that caused me suffering.
You were the victim, in other words.
Exactly. And, you know, this is it. This gets us down to the concept of cause and effect. The way the world and the ego teaches us is the world is being done to us, right? And when we switch that round and we decide to truly do the spiritual awakening path, as in A Course in Miracles, what we find, and gosh, it's so freeing and liberating to find this out, is actually the world is being done by us, right? So we are the cause, and the stuff that's the button-pressing environment is the effect. So when we look at it that way, we can then try, we can get into this mindset where we're not avoiding any button pressing. We then look at it and go, okay, this person is rubbing me up the wrong way. Let's use this as an opportunity for self-growth and undoing the ego offer it to the divine, what we call the universal inspiration,
yes,
and get into the now moment, observe it, and bingo, in that moment it can be transformed, right?
Yes, yes.
And what happens too is that we start to have this great sense of gratitude for the people and situations that normally do press our buttons. And then the next stage after that is that, well, we don't need to learn that way anymore. So then, of course, this is in the fifth and sixth stage here of the awakening, is
yeah.
guess what happens then? We don't yeah. need those people and situations to press our buttons anymore.
No.
So that doesn't
right.
happen. Yeah?
Well, now, in the Course in Miracles, you quoted from that saying, if I have created everything I see, no one has done me wrong. And I want to ask you a question in relating to that situation. How would you apply that thinking, say, when you're in a multiple experiencing, like something you've experienced, say an unhappy marriage or even a divorce? How do you relate to all those things or those people that are around you in that experience?
Okay. Well, you know, it does depend on where you're at in your mind and what... how much of the ego has been let go of, yeah? But from where I stand now, after many years of doing this, I guess what I'd say is I'd look back on the dreadful, and I can only say dreadful relationships that I did have, you know, some of them were quite dreadful. One of them was with my own mother, and we had sort of an abusive relationship going on there. And look
yeah.
back on that and think, my God, back then, before I realized that the world is being done by me, and I thought
right.
the world was being done to me, I
yeah,
really
yeah.
saw her as being my persecutor or victimizer, and I was the victim, okay?
Yeah.
And so that caused me to avoid people who were like her, in you know, and avoid her as well, and it a lot of conflicts, etc. Now, as a little more wisdom has dawned, I now have gratitude for her because it was the abuse and the button pressing that gave me the chance to forgive her. And by forgiving her, I was able to undo a great chunks of my own ego projection and
yeah,
come
yeah.
to the point where there's nobody left in my life now who does that to me anymore. Does that make sense?
Yes, indeed. Yeah, yeah.
yeah.
I'm with you.
Yeah.
So... does that thinking also apply, say, where you suffer from illness? Because you can't,
yeah.
say if it's a physical illness, you
yeah.
can't really even think in terms of blaming somebody else for that. But
no.
would you say that is caused by self?
Yes, I would. And, you know, we have to be careful here because, and this we explain in the book too, is through,
yeah.
you know, the first stages, which is stage one, the undoing of spiritual awakening, and sorting out, and the third stage too, relinquishment, we can get a bit confused about illness. Illness is one of those things, yeah, where
yeah.
we as soon as we realize that the illness is not being done to us and that the illness is something that the ego has unconsciously manifested to try to get us again, yeah, we have to be careful that we don't feel guilty about that. That's number one, because it's not our fault. Number
yeah.
two is there is nobody to blame. So... because the ego loves to blame. And
yes.
if it can't blame anything outside of us, what it does, it goes within and tries to blame us for it. And that's
mm-hmm.
just as bad, right? So drop all blame. But what illness is purely the ego really, really trying to make us believe that we are a body, that that's the sum of who we are, and there's no getting out of it until we die.
Yes, yes.
Okay? And so, I guess the wisdom when we are ill, when we do get sick, the wisdom is to look upon it as, okay, this is purely the ego trying to frighten me and trying to make me see myself as a body and only a body. But then it is that we need to try and pull our consciousness out of that mindset, out of that, and trust that we are, of course, much bigger than just the body. In fact,
yes.
the body is just an illusion of who we really are.
Yes,
and
indeed.
We have some tools in the book to ask for divine guidance, universal inspiration to come in and give us what the gift is. And there's always a gift in
yes.
any illness, in any sickness. there is always a gift. Now, the key here is to find, now, what is that gift? And, you know, to ask divine guidance to reveal that to us. My way is to journal. Others is to talk about it to somebody else or just to sit in meditation and to ask. Each one of us has a pathway or you know, a vehicle to find out what is the gift that lies within the illness. Because I have been ill myself, and I have to say, looking back, there's not one time when I look back now that there wasn't a gift in the illness. But I look back now and see, gosh, I could have shortened the illness journey by years if I'd only known what I know now.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
Can you relate to that too?
Indeed. Oh, yes. I guess if we feel we've been victims, as you've pointed out, we're blaming someone else, and all the time we hold that in our mind, we're probably holding on to the guilt.
Oh, yeah. You've said it beautifully there, Mike. Yeah. Absolutely beautifully. That's exactly what we're doing.
And, now, the ego evidently has no place in what I would call our higher self. Is that because we need to refine that part of our consciousness?
What I'll say about that is who we really are is absolute divinity, all right? And it has no needs. It's infinite. So it's a living conduit for the divine will. Basically, who we really are is divine will. But while we're thinking and planning through the ego, which, of course, is the opposite to divine will, we'll look upon divine will and go, oh, my God, no, I don't want divine will because divine will doesn't have my best interest at heart.
Yeah.
Okay? But I'm getting off the track here. I'm sorry about that. But what the pathway is here is actually is going through the stages of undoing who we think we are, so who we really are can be revealed. And I sort of lost track of the question a bit there, Mike, so do you mind to repeat that last bit of the question?
Yeah, I was simply asking if the ego, or rather I was saying that the ego presumably has no place in our higher self or our higher consciousness.
Yeah, it doesn't, but at the end of, or at nearing the end, and the end of the awakening, spiritual awakening journey, now this is something that I was very pleased to find out 20 years ago, it's not all the ego need be annihilated in order for us to be spiritually awakened or enlightened, okay?
Yeah.
But what actually happens is we get to the stage where the ego is relinquished, the last thread of ego is relinquished to who we really are underneath the ego, all right? Because if we didn't have a thread of ego in this paradigm we call the world, time and space, we could not stay here.
No.
The ego is what I believe anchors us here. So we do need to have that. Otherwise, we'd have no way to intellectualize. We'd have no mechanism to perceive. We wouldn't be able to eat or go to the bathroom, and we couldn't maintain a body, you know?
So we do need that
last thread of ego. But the beauty of this is when we are awakened is that that has been abdicated, that last thread of ego, to who we really are, okay?
So 99.9%
of all the energy that we use daily and even in our sleep to try and maintain control of this world, which is really a dream, that's abdicated and given over to trust, which is in the divine self. So when we're awakened or nearing awakening, we have got 99.9% more energy, more alertness, more joy, etc., 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 to run our lives.
Yeah.
And that's what I want.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And it seems to me that with my belief, and I'm feeling that it may be yours, that we've had many, many lives on the earth, that over this whole period of experience, we've carried that with us into each life. So the ego really is, I guess, the sum total of what we've experienced before. And when we're born into yet another life, we apply that experience to whatever we come across.
Oh, I agree with you, Mike, definitely, most definitely, you know. And no doubt, I read a little bit about you that you've had, well, the way I perceived it was that you've had quite a few past life experiences, and you have some memory of an Egyptian background too.
Yes.
Is that correct? Yeah?
I do, yes.
Yes, you do. Well, I share something with you too. It's not in the Egyptian area, it's in Native American, early Native American area. And, I mean, it has its merits because if you're open-minded enough, you can take what you did learn from that and you can ask the divine to come in and to illuminate what are the lessons, what are the most helpful lessons that you could apply today in this lifetime that you
yes.
have a memory of in another.
Yes.
And I guess that's what you're doing by doing this radio program.
Yeah.
Is that right?
But just as a note there, because you've raised the point here, I was told, or given a life in Egypt, in ancient Egypt, which I was told was a very happy experience as a priest. So evidently I had quite a happy and satisfying time. But what I'd like to ask you now is, how do you deal with people that would come to you, which I bet they have in your workshops, and say, I can't help the way I am, it was the way I was born?
Oh, okay, yeah, I've had lots of them. I bet you've had lots of them too.
I bet you have, yeah.
Yes.
Well, how do you put it over to them that they're not bound by the way they think they were born?
Well, the first thing that I would do is inquire as to the intent behind what they've just said, you know? Gauge the degree of fear, the fear of change, right?
Mm.
The fear of loss and the fear of sacrifice in somebody who says, look, this is just how I am, I can't change that. Because
yeah.
when somebody says that, there's going to be a great resistance to change because there's a great
yeah.
belief in some sacrifice at the thought of having
yes.
to change or undo the ego or to grow spiritually, etc. So
indeed.
I would have to just detect what is the level of real fear there. And if the level's quite high, I would just say to them, look, you're fine the way you are, and when you've had enough suffering, when the ego's brought upon you a lot of pain, and you're prepared to try another way, in fact, you're very willing to try another way, come back and I'll help you, all right? But until then, I couldn't help them and I wouldn't help them. But I have a friend, actually, Mike, who
yeah.
has been on this pathway. She's a Buddhist, and she's been on this pathway for 27 years, and she's going through an absolute nightmare this last 2 years, especially in relationship and business, and you know, it's in every aspect of her life, the stuff has hit the fan, if you know what I'm saying. And
yes.
she's just come to me recently and said, look, I am prepared to change now. I didn't think I ever could because that was just the way I was born, but now I'm prepared to change. So now she's making significant steps in the last 3 months to embracing change and taking full responsibility that she is doing the world. The world is not being done to her.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I guess you've had people come to you like that too.
Well, yes, I know some like that, yes.
Yeah. Well, you sort of get a good feeling as to those who are open-minded enough to change and those
yes.
who definitely are not. And I think it's not fair to them if we try and change them. And, and it's not fair on us either.
Yeah. Do you think it's the ego that encourages people to have, for example, false pride, and because of that they react adversely to anything that pricks their pride?
Oh, definitely. I mean, I think that's the ego's second name, pride.
Is it? Yeah.
Oh, I think so, definitely. And, you know, all that pride is a mistaken investment in a false self. Okay? And so,
yes.
you know, when I was younger, I used to have a, I guess, you know, a great dislike for people with a lot of pride. I couldn't stand it. I really couldn't. It wasn't until I grew with a lot more wisdom that now I have great compassion for people with pride, because I see that that's just a false investment in the ego self, because, you know, it's a sense of worthlessness and it's a sense of pseudo-worthiness. So then I can look at them with that false pride and see that they do have a sense of worthlessness because they don't know who they really are. And so with that, I can have a great deal of compassion for them now. You know, I certainly will not take offense by what they say, and I certainly will try not to press their buttons, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Because pride...
How do you think... Yeah. Yes, carry on.
Yeah, because, you know, pride's a big one. I think every second person has a great deal of pride. And,
you know,
it's an issue that separates us, because the problem with pride, when we've got false pride like that, it's a separation device. So when you've got false pride, to the degree that you have false pride is to the degree that you cannot really love, which means you can't receive love and you cannot give it.
Yeah. It doesn't necessarily mean that being proud is wrong, does it? Because you might have achieved things in your life which you rightly feel proud of.
Yes. Oh, in that instance, that's fine. But we're talking about pride, the type of pride that actually separates people. Pride that is a judgment that's inflicted on others. That type of pride is a separation device.
Yes.
Yeah.
So we are living at the moment in very rapidly changing times, and it seems to me there are, particularly at the moment, there's a lot of negativity taking place. With your experience and your understanding, how would you advise people to set themselves apart from it so that they're not affected by it?
Okay, two levels. I'm going to talk about two levels. Number one is the world that we live in, which is the level of form here in the dream. And the second one will be the level of the mind, which is the level of cause, where all cause that has its effects in the dream come from. But at the level of form here, you know, some helpful hints, and this is just taken out of my experience, is things that upset you, like reading the newspaper every day or watching the news on TV or disturbing movies on TV, that sort of thing of a negative nature regularly are sure to pull you into a negative belief system. So, you know, my recommendation at the level of form with that is read the newspaper once a week instead of every week, and watch TV once a week instead of, or just watch the Discovery Channel, you're safe.
All right? All the good stuff,
But, you know, it's just common sense. It's just absolute common sense. And just to observe whatever presses your buttons, because they are gratitude and forgiveness opportunities. Anything, anybody or anything or any situation that truly presses your buttons will be a cue or a red flag for you to go, oh, okay, now what is it that my ego is projecting here? What is it that it needs to learn? Okay? So at the level of form, if we can just do that here in the world. And, of course, going back to the other level, which is the level of mind, like I said before, is where everything comes from. It's in our state of mind. It's in the God mind or the unified self. It's in that state that we try to achieve on a regular basis, is try to get to that state. And the way that we do that is to contact the now moment as much as possible. And I think Eckhart Tolle really has some wonderful books out on that, as well as the Course in Miracles. And to just really extend love, because, you know, the secret to life, I find, if I was to summarize it in one sentence, would be to give whatever it is that you most think you need.
Yes.
No joke. I've done that now for about 10 years, and I tell you, that got me through some terrible nightmares in my life. Yes. And got me to the point here where I can see my whole way out. So it really is about giving what it is you most think you need.
You don't necessarily mean that you have to give away all your material possessions, do you?
Presumably. No, because it doesn't matter about your material possessions. That's the level of form. And thanks for that, Mike. It really comes down to, I mean, if you were to score on the scoreboard of God, right, the only way you could score on the scoreboard of God is with intent.
Yes.
You see, intent is 100% of everything. To give an example, and this is something I didn't understand for 30 years. I just couldn't get this. And I'm sure a lot of others don't find it difficult too, which is I thought that if I gave a homeless person $10 and did a good thing, that I scored well with God. Okay?
Yeah.
It amounts to a row of beans, in fact. Nothing. Unless, of course, my intent when I gave that $10 to a homeless person was one of absolute gratitude and extension, with no desire to have anything returned to me by God or by anybody else, right? In other words, if I had no desire to have any brownie points, Now, and so, you know, so what it comes down to is what's my intent? And what a lot of us do, and we do this in relationship, and I was very guilty of this for many years, we all are, and that is to give to get. And we do this in our special relationships, especially our romantic relationships, where we meet somebody, we fall in love, and unconsciously, and sometimes even consciously, we say, okay, now, if you love me, you'll do what I want.
Yes, yes.
And you'll give me what I want. And
indeed,
you'll do what I say, yeah? And,
yes,
and it's like, and as soon as that person doesn't give you what you want, what are you going to do? You're going to complain and judge a partner.
Yeah.
And then what we have there is a conditional relationship. Well, you know, true giving is giving without any strings attached. That's unconditional giving.
Absolutely.
And we don't really know this until we experience it on numerous levels, a number of times, where we give out of love with no intent to get anything back. And that is when we start to truly experience miracles in our life.
Yeah.
Up until then, we're just doing like pseudo giving. We're not really giving. It's the ego that's giving to get.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And I think I can say I've experienced that feeling, and it's a very wonderful one. Now, there's not too much time left in the program because I have to take a few minutes to announce my next guest. But we're okay for the moment. What I wanted to ask you is, obviously around us at this time, there appears to be a lot of preparation going on to help people to ascend. And obviously the type of work you're doing is also helping to that end. But do you believe that we are in a cycle that's going to end at the date 2012?
Oh, that's an interesting question. I would love to have that answered right now.
Oh,
as would you.
I wonder what you believed.
Oh, well, you know, and this is just my deduction. This is just my perception. It may be wrong, and that's okay.
Yes, yes.
But it's just my perception, and my intuitive hunch is that 2012 indicates in time and space, which, by the way, is an illusion, indicates in time and space a significant leap into the undoing of time and space. Yeah?
I agree.
And so I do believe that we have been in a preparatory time where we're collectively getting to what's called a celestial speed up, I guess, where the consciousness of the planet in the oneness are ready to embrace such a leap of consciousness, because what we're talking here is a leap of consciousness that's going from duality to non-duality, and that's a mighty leap indeed.
Absolutely,
that really, really is. So I think we are all being prepared to take that leap, and that 2012 is going to be a milestone in that.
Well,
and I'd be interested to hear what your thinking is on that too.
Well, I think you've expressed it very well, in my opinion. I believe it is the end of a very great cycle, and we are, as humankind and the Earth itself, given the opportunity to ascend, and we will move into what has often been called the Golden Age. I think that's it, full stop. And people that don't choose to be part of it will go to a similar planet prepared like the Earth to continue their experience.
Wow.
That's it in a nutshell.
Yeah. Wow, that's great. That's great. So, you know, it's I'm just hoping that I'm physically here in 2012 to join the party.
Absolutely, yes. Oh, it is said to be quite unique in the sense that we will ascend in our physical body, but one that's been very much refined with a crystalline structure.
Oh.
Anyway, we're not here to talk about my beliefs.
No, but that's wonderful. Oh, that's just so wonderful. I mean, that gives people a goal to actually look toward, and
yes,
it gives them a light to follow.
Absolutely,
you know, as they're going through the undoing of this thought system that is one of suffering. So I think that's wonderful. That's really, really wonderful.
It is, isn't it? It's nice to know that there is an end to duality, and that if you want to get on board, you can.
Yes.
Let me go back to something here. I read that you published, that is you and
Thomas.
A number of articles, for example, such as The Illusion of Our Identity. Mm-hmm. Were they articles that preceded the book, or are they extracts from it?
Some of them are articles that preceded the book, and we've written for a number of international magazines. So they are available on our website, Mike, too.
Yeah.
So if people want to go there and read these articles, they're quite welcome to. It's just takemetotruth.com, same name as the book.
Good. Yes.
Yeah, no, there were some later articles, like A Mind Made Self, I think, that has some excerpts from the book in there, too. Yeah.
Right, this is your time for a little bit of advertising here. I gather you're coming to the UK in June, and you're doing 3 weeks of one-day workshops. Whereabouts will you be in the UK?
Yeah, good question. We're going to do a two-day intensive spiritual awakening workshop, a two-day intensive in Somerset, Glastonbury.
Somerset, right,
and that's June 14th, 15th. And we're also doing a one-day workshop with the let me just see here. I'm trying to read this without my glasses on. The Miracles Network, in London Central, and that's Saturday, June the 8th. We're doing another one-day workshop in London at the College of Psychic Studies Saturday, June 21st. Now, these are, you can look at these on our website, which is takemetotruth.com.
Yes.
They're there, and if anybody wants to book them, they can go ahead and do that. So we're hoping to have a lot of fun in the UK. We've got 3 weeks there, and then we're going to Europe. I think we're doing 10 days in Belgium, I believe, or a week in Belgium.
Certainly busy, because I gather at the moment Thomas is in Canada, and he's obviously going to catch you up here.
He is. He's going. We're going to meet in London. It's our first time there.
Uh-huh.
So have you got any advice for us, Mike?
Well, I'm going to be a little bit facetious here, really. But don't stay in London. It's so expensive.
Well, you know what? You're a mind reader. This is a trust walk that Tomas and I have done. This really is that we've got this entire international workshop schedule is all thanks to Tomas's credit card. All right.
Uh-huh.
So we're not staying in any hotels. We're staying with some lovely people in London.
Oh, good.
So that's wonderful.
Good.
So we're being looked after.
That's great. So you should be. Now,
thank you.
We've got a minute or two left. Have you any final message for our listeners?
Well, I guess it would be only that there's nobody out there. There's nobody out there. There's Well, what I mean by that is there's just you. And the journey to awakening means to go within and to undo the false self, the cause of all external suffering and external relationship problems all come from within. So it's about going, daring to go within and undoing our uninvestigated beliefs. That's about it, Mike, really. And read A Course in Miracles and read Gary Renard's and Byron Katie and Eckhart Tolle's books, because they are really wonderful, wonderful lights on the pathway to spiritual awakening.
Yes. There will be some people who come across your book, possibly, who have a strong attachment to religious beliefs. Do you think it's possible for them to move over into your way of thinking, or is that too difficult?
I think for some, most definitely, it's going to be great. And for others, no, they're not ready to give up their religious beliefs. And that's cool too, because everybody is going to wake up in time. It's inevitable. It's just how long will it take? That's the key. So I like to rest in the comfort of knowing that everybody will awaken. Not one of us will be left out. But it just depends on how much suffering can the ego bear. And when you've had enough suffering, then you just decide, okay, that's it, that's enough, I want to awaken.
Of course, yeah. Now, I've got something to read out to you here. It's only very short, but you know in life you get these coincidences, as you call them. But today on one of my emails was from the Christ Michael Spiritual Network, and I get their regular messages. And believe it or not, there was something about the ego. And I want to read it out to you, because I have a feeling you will say that expresses it perfectly. But I'd just like a very quick comment from you, because we haven't got much time left. But it reads as follows: ego, the self-reflection of the smaller part of your consciousness, devoid of true spiritual perception and humility. One's ego does serve a valuable function of self-awareness, but the elevation of this is only a partial aspect of a person's being to supremacy was and remains a tragic mistake. So that's all more or less hit it on the head there.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And where's that? Which website is that from?
Well, it's from a regular message that comes out from the Christ Michael Spiritual Network. I think it's actually .com.
Oh, very good. That does. That hits the nail right on the head.
Yes, yes.
Oh, that's wonderful.
I thought it might, and having read it today, on the day that you were coming on, I thought, well, that's a coincidence. I'll read it out to you. But I have to say, you've been an excellent talker, and you certainly know your business, as they say, Nuke, and I'm very pleased to have had you on my program, and I hope your workshops in the UK go off well. I'm sure they'll be well attended. I will circulate my own subscribers list with your details in case anyone listening in has missed it. That's really all I can say for the moment.
Because lovely. And can we put a link on our website so that our readers can come listen to this interview too?
Of course you can, yes.
Terrific.
Yeah. I'll send you the details in an email over the weekend. Is that all right?
Oh, lovely. Thank you, Mike. You've asked some wonderful questions.
Okay. Thank you very much for being with me. I'll quickly tell our listeners that Michael Horn is going to be my guest next Friday. He's the authorized American media representative for Billy Meyer, famed for his UFO contacts and his wonderfully clear photographs of UFOs. I'm guessing that there's hardly anyone who's interested in UFOs that isn't aware of that name, so I'm looking forward to a really excellent interview. So I hope you'll be with me, and thank you for being with me today. God bless you all.
Where would $5,000 per week take you? Discover the exact details of a simple and proven system that quickly puts $5,000 to $10,000 in many students' pockets every week. What's most amazing is that there are almost no computer skills required, and you can start pulling in cash automatically within just a few hours. We are absolutely convinced that our proven system will create massive wealth for virtually anyone. and we'll prove it. Go to bbscashflow.com now and get all the details. That's bbscashflow.com.